Hi, Art Supply Posse. As I record today's episode, it's April the 2nd, 2026. It's autumn here in Australia. The days are getting shorter, leaves are changing colour, and everything looks and feels different. With these seasonal changes, I find my creative wants are shifting as well. I have fabric laid out on my sewing table in preparation for a top I will sew for myself. I have accessories laid out for a personal photo project. And I've pulled out a tin of watercolours and have so far completed days one and two of my guest today, Nikki Trakos, her 30-day watercolour challenge. Watercolour feels uncomfortable for me. I prefer mediums that give me control. I have talked to watercolour artists and I've watched tutorials and I have tried and I have given up on watercolour. But I'm back trying it again this April and it's all thanks to Nikki. So thank you, Nikki, for joining me again today and welcome back to the posse.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited for us to chat. I feel like it's just
same
to chat same. With a friend.
So, you know, I should say right up at the top, not only does Nikki have a 30-day watercolour challenge happening right now, but she has a new book coming. Or is it, what's the actual release date? Let's go straight to the book because I'm excited for, I love books, all books are great, but, you know, art books are even better. So let's go straight to the book.
So pub date is April 14th. But I've been messaged and tagged and emailed the last few days, and it looks like some of the pre-order books are being delivered as of now.
Oh, that's exciting.
I'm really excited because it's not yet on the shelves. I think retail, it'll be on shelves on the 14th, which is the book's birthday. Yep. But people are getting their net copies, their copies in advance, which is exciting. So, yes, it's my
This
second.
Is why we pre-order, people. Pre-order, then you get... You get before everybody else, right?
You get the little gifts that I sprinkle in, as well as the I got it first kind of.
Yeah. It's just made it more exciting.
Yeah. So this second book is a really great experience book. It is a technique, watercolor technique book that will take you through, again, the basics of what I teach and reinforcing practices and some exercises. But there's 20 brand new painting projects, but you can paint right inside the book. So the line drawings are printed, and I feel like it's the great companion if you sort of just want to take the book and a few supplies with you, or if you want to set up a small space and have a bit of a more intimate practice, especially if you're new to watercolor or just coming back to it and feel like you need a bit more guidance and a bit more ease.
That sounds fantastic. That is so exciting. So. Why did you decide to create this book? Like, what was the pull for you for this second book?
That's a good question. It's funny how timing works out and how, you know, it's not always best timing for projects or things to happen, but when you're ready and you need a distraction, sometimes the project appears. I was really happy with my first book and it did really well and I had lots of people connect with it, which is always the goal. And then I kind of felt like a bit of a lull. This was sort of the end, maybe about a year and a half ago. It was the end of the year. Reached out to my editor, who I have a really good relationship with. She actually reached out to me as I was thinking to reach out to her. It was funny. I was kind of ready for a new book. It's like working on a book is all-consuming. It's all-encompassing. It is the one thing that I go to sleep thinking about and the one thing that I wake up thinking about, as well as, you know, everything else that races through my head. But it's the one thing that I get really involved in. I kind of pour myself into it. And I was ready for a bit of distraction. We were just had, you know, a few things happening on the personal side. And it was, you know, something that I knew that could offer me a little bit of distraction, a little bit of peace, because that's what my watercolor practice offers me. And then when my editor and I connected, she mentioned this new format that they're working on. So I asked her to send me a copy of, you know, what it would look like. I was really particular about how it functioned and, you know, thought a lot about the process. And then I just jumped in. I said, okay, it's time for book two. And I kind of feel like it was a bit of, if I could do, you know, something a little differently with the first book, what would it be? How could I improve it? How could I make it a bit more interesting, exciting, connect more to it. And so I feel like the second book was not, I don't want to say a do-over because I love my first book, but it's almost like, oh, I could see how I could just tweak this, or I could just improve that. And it really did offer me about 6 months of a bit of solace, I want to say. We had a lot happening in our personal life, and it was my go to my desk and I just work on the next page or the next project or work on the cover. And it was a great escape for me.
So you said that you can actually paint within the book pages itself, which I have thoughts on this. I have feelings on this apparently, Nikki, because like I am a person who, you know how there are, I think there are two people in the world. There are people who the book pages don't, you don't do anything, but you flip them and read. And then there are people who I can't deal with, who write in margins and fold pages. And so how on earth am I, let's be, you know, this is about me at this second. How am I supposed to paint in pages in a book, Nikki? I can't do that. Like that's, what? Why? How? This is no.
You know what? I love that you brought this up because I've been an instructor now for a few years and teaching watercolor, and watercolor can be very unforgiving. It isn't the type of medium where you can go over it and you know, maybe put a bit of gesso and, you know, maybe add another layer. It's definitely a medium that you need to let go with a little bit, especially as you're learning. So there are two thoughts that I have, and I'm glad that you mentioned this because I'm working on, I have the Artist Lounge, which is my membership, and that's sort of a little journey on let's continue to make art. And May, I'm going to give everyone a sneak peek, but May is all about hand binding sketchbooks. Watercolor sketchbooks can be quite pricey. I'm very particular with paper and things like that, sizes. And as I was working on editing the very last lesson for May, I was thinking about what are the challenges that people will have. And it's always the challenge of staring at a blank page and having the pressure of then making something remarkable or something beautiful or something that they're proud of. And it's that, I don't want to say fear, but maybe it is a bit of fear, apprehension, that tension sometimes stop people from making art. I see it. It happens to me. And then on the flip side, so I make these sketchbooks so that they're small and approachable and they're not as, you know, maybe intimidating to fill. But sometimes when people, and this is, I'm holding up a sketchbook that I just finished making literally seconds before we started chatting. Sometimes in a bound book, the pressure is a little bit different, or maybe people respond to that type of pressure because it's a bound book. It's, you know, a commitment. When you flip through it, you want to feel like, oh, that was a great accomplishment, or that was a great session, or you feel a little bit, pressure again, because we want to make something beautiful each time we sit down to make art. So I understand what you mean, because books are precious, especially when it's bound pages. I feel like the weight of them is more expensive, maybe not even thinking from a monetary perspective, but they have more meaning because they're bound pages, and maybe that weight of that, there's expectation around that. So it's
They're special, right? Yes. Like a book, the actual book, if we just think of it, whether it's a sketchbook or, you know, with writing, it's always had it sits in a place, right? A book is a special thing, and rightly so. So I think the thought of making art in a book that's not just a sketchbook, right? Like it's actually got instructions and learning and all that around it. Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I can deal with that.
You know, and I think too, because we're very similar in our love for books and our appreciation for them, and I think because we do hold a lot of value to, you know, what books offer us, that maybe that apprehension is because we value a book so much. But I guarantee you, this watercolor technique book, the pages that you paint in are practice pages. It feels approachable, and that's with everything that I do. I want it to feel approachable. I don't want something to feel so dear that you don't want to dirty it or you don't want to mess it up. And I want you to annotate it and do your color swatches in it. And it's funny, I'm going to hold up the book so you can see. I know people can't see, but I'm holding up a book. It really comes in two sections, and there's a technique in one side.
Oh, wow.
And then there's, this is, I've already painted in mine. And then
there's, yeah.
pages where there's line drawings, but I left areas for you to swatch on purpose. I made sure that itself was instructional so that it didn't
look
like it had to be a perfect finished painting the first time around, because ideally this is the first time that you'll paint each painting project. And then my hope is that you'll trace the line drawings and try them again and practice.
Which makes sense. Like the benefit of me being able to see that book, which obviously the listeners can't, but it now makes sense to me, because in my head I had it as it was all in the one book. It's like all in one thing. And I'm like, how do you pick the right paper that handles typed? But that's it. Now it doesn't matter, Kim. You don't have to worry about that. Like, but that also makes sense, because that to me is an invitation to then, like, let's say you sit down and you do one project, and you, for whatever reason, that particular project speaks to you. There's an invitation to then take that from out of the book onto paper elsewhere. And if you know, maybe you might replicate that same thing 20 times, right? Like, as you're getting the hang of it and loving it and learning more about it. And so it's like you've given the lesson, you've given the invitation, and then people can take that and expand and use it further out, which I love. That is
and it's
so
such
cool.
An interactive experience too, because I have QR codes in the book, so the technique section of the book has videos that you can watch of the technique or exercise that I describe. And then I also have all of the line drawings as a downloadable PDF through a QR code as well. So we save room in the book.
Yes.
Book is your practice. But if you really love, let's say, the, you know, beautiful peonies, not peony, I'm looking at the book and looking at the cover, pansies, let's say, you want to paint that again, you can just download the line drawings, print them out, and trace them onto your favorite watercolor paper. And that will be the second round. So you've already done the practice, you've kind of figured out your steps, you've worked on some color swatching, that's your practice. And then I want you to
paint
again and enjoy it again and have that be that ease and that invitation to continue that practice.
That is so cool. I love that. I think that's a fantastic idea. So is this how you mentioned that the publishing company was looking at a new format. So is that the sort of thing they're looking at doing, like in introducing art to people in that way? Because that sounds like a fantastic idea to work and to offer.
It is. It's through, I don't remember the imprint exactly, but they do more craft-inspired books and sort of educational boxes and things like that. And so I guess Cordo, my publisher, had looked at that format and they were able to publish in that style. So I've seen a few other authors/artists who they're working with on that format. It's just leaning into that idea of let's do something tactile, something analog, and have it be, and again, my approach, and I don't know if this is their approach or others, but it's just really having it be inviting and something that doesn't feel like so dear that you don't want to mess it up. And even myself, because I love books, I have maybe 12 on the go right now, and they're a variety of art books and some, you know, personal growth and some fabulous stories. And I've actually started annotating them more and making notes in them and kind of enjoying them, because while I'm vintage book shopping, which I do a lot of, I love the books that have notes in them. I want to see and enjoy the feeling of a reader really, you know, enjoying the book. So, especially when you're still reading paper books, like books that are printed on paper and
you're
actually holding them. It's not on the Kindle or listening to
it. Yeah. I feel like this offering is a really gentle way for people to get to learning to love watercolor, and especially because, you know, they can, you said it's QR code, here's a little video, so you can still do the digital part of it or the I guess learning, because I mean you're on the other side of the world to me. Everybody's all over the place. Like, our listeners are everywhere. This, just speaking of thinking about the podcast, we're all over the world, yet we can connect because of technology, right? So this is fantastic and we love it and it is good, but then I think we need as humans, we need that tactile, we need the paper and the paint and the water, like, you know, we need all of that. And the fact that you've been able to pull that together is wonderful, right? Like, it's just, we couldn't have done this 20 years ago. let's be honest, right? Like, this book exists in a time and a place which is right now, which is so extraordinary and so fantastic. And it's just, I just feel like it's a wonderful thing. It's a really good thing to have almost out in the world, unless you pre-ordered and then you've got it, which is exciting.
Thank you. No, and I think too, there are different styles of learning. It's harder for me myself to learn as I'm following steps. I really have to focus and I really have to make sure that I take my time. So to have that visual component where you can maybe read the instruction in the book and then the visual component supports that mm-hmm. so that you think, oh, that's what she meant by XYZ.
Yes.
And I think too, yes. As someone who has, you know, a lot of online art classes where I have the visual, I have the component, the audio, so that I can, you know, tell you exactly if you can't specifically get, you know, the technique as I'm sharing it. So I've got all of those aids in when I'm teaching. So I know this, I felt this a lot with the first book, is writing instructions that are clear to describe exactly what I want, you know, the reader to go through. It's challenging. It made my brain.
Yeah.
Blow up a few times.
Like, I bet it did.
How do I do this? How do I break it down? And I hope it's successful. And I, you know, hope with the second one, it makes it even more. So again, it's just leaning into techniques that maybe you've read about it, you know, once or twice before, but maybe something just clicks. Something in the way that, you know, I describe it or who you are in your art practice, you're coming in at a moment where it just clicks for you. So I think,
yes.
You know, being able to then take you through practices again, because we're doing the same wet-on-wet technique, we're doing the same color mixing, but maybe I'm tweaking the colors, maybe I'm tweaking the way that I'm describing it, but also the person that's coming in, you know, as the artist who's learning, they're coming in with a little bit more practice under their belt. So it's that delivery, but it's also the moment that they're in their practice that maybe they have an aha moment that helps them break through a challenge they're having with their watercolor. And that's exciting.
Mm. So I mentioned at the top that being April, it's watercolor month for you.
Self-declared.
For participants.
I'm declaring it as watercolor month.
Yeah, it's watercolor month. April is watercolor month. It's done.
In case you
didn't
know.
That's the law. That's the rules. I did the thing that I don't usually do, but I actually printed out your 30 days, like the 30 day, which I don't do that usually. I don't know why. I would just usually look on a screen, right? But I'm like, no, print it out and put it in front of you.
Yeah, I love that so much.
And yeah. And I've got to say, I think printing it out made it, I want to say more real,
okay,
but also more exciting. Because I've read it, you know.
Yeah, of course. Like, you know what's coming.
This day is that thing, and this is what's coming. And like, I woke up this morning, and one of the first thoughts I had was, oh, today is leaves, because yesterday was watching the colors, and then today was painting leaves. And I was excited to paint leaves. Now, are they great? Probably not.
Who
Doesn't
cares?
Matter? No. No, who cares? Exactly. Doesn't who matter. Cares? I did the thing.
The point is that you connected to your practiced and what was happening in your space.
Yes.
And I'm making a very small little box with my hands, because it really is, you're just coming into yourself, right? So it's that just going to enjoy what's happening on the page, and I'm going to just lean into this really gentle practice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited. It's funny because today is April 1st still. I love that. We're on the side of the world. It is almost spring, although winter is really holding on, and I love the energy of cozy, because fall is, you know, probably my most favorite season. So it's that cozy
mm-hmm.
coming in, and, you know, being a little bit more into what, you know, grounds you and brings you inside more. But also I'm I'm excited. It's April. Let's do something. So let's work.
Yes,
on
of course, because it's,
which I
it's
love
what's that. Coming. It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it really
is. It's so weird, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's funny how, and again, this is technology. We're on opposite sides of the world. Therefore, our experiences of the world are completely different. Yet, there's similarities. You know, like it is. We are change of seasons, right? It happens regardless. And yet, we can still do things that are kind of similar in a way. Like, so, of course, I mean, it's not cold yet, but it will get cold because I'm heading towards winter. But then we've made changes or partly the way our house, we designed our house to have areas where we can always kind of enjoy the outside if we wanted to. It would just mean you might have to wear more layers, right? Like, that's fine. We can do that. So I can sit outside and, you know, be doing whatever, painting or reading or whatever. And it might not be the best weather, but I can still enjoy that outside. And you would be outside because when you get to the lovely, the warmer weather, because when
it
winter,
will come,
let's go.
We'll complain when it comes.
Yes.
It will come.
Correct. Because that's how we do. That's just how we are as humans. But do you know what I mean? Like, so you can be enjoying the warmth and I can be not enjoying the cold because I don't. And yet I can still be not enjoying the cold outside if I choose to, right? And it's just one of those things where I find myself, I did this. I never used to do this because I never had people I could have connected with on the other side of the world like we do now with technology. Thinking of, oh, wonder what the weather is like for Nikki today, you know, or other people. Like, actually, I don't know. I just find that something about that just comes into, it comes into your thoughts, and I feel like it comes through into whatever you're working on as well, in a way, which probably sounds weird and woo-woo, and I don't know.
No,
but
not
I do
at all.
Feel
love
that.
It. I'm here for
I
it.
Do feel that. I do feel that.
Too,
I feel like that happens.
To your point, like just how, you know, opposite we are in this moment from, you know, where we live, our climate, the energy that we're bringing into our space and how we're feeling, watercolor still offers us a moment to connect. It's just giving us a different energy of that, which is,
yes.
So that's
yes.
like with anything, whether you're knitting or you're journaling or you're doing photography, it really just offers you in the season an opportunity to still express that part of you, but it just offers you something a little bit different because of the season that you're in. And I mean, that just speaks to, I think, any type of creativity, right? It's just giving you that moment of what you need, and you can adapt it based on, it's spring. I haven't used this many bright colors in my watercolor practice as I have right now. And I'm typically, give me the moody, what's behind me, give me the moody,
yes, yes,
grounded, earthy tones. But this hope for spring is really cool.
Yeah, definitely.
So
it does. It is.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, spring is so hopeful. It's funny, isn't it? Like, it's just the promise of what's to come. It's the promise of the flowers that are coming. I have, I guess you could call it a mini orchard. You know, I've got fruit trees, plenty of them. So when it's spring, it's like, oh, they're coming. Like, the fruit is coming because I love fresh fruit. And so it's just so much excitement with spring. It's just, it's a fabulous time.
And we just had a big storm. Yeah. It was a scary one, but everything smells differently now that the storm is past.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some tiny, tiny little flowers poking their heads. It's just, it is an exciting time for sure. Especially when we had such a long and heavy winter. This year was a little bit, it's like I said, and it's holding on. We're supposed to get one more snowfall, I think. Not a heavy one, but it will snow. So just when you think you can take out your spring clothes, you need to make sure you have your winter boots right beside your flip-flops.
I'm curious
though, so what watercolor supplies are you reaching for? Because you said you had a set that you hadn't touched yet. And I love
Which is, yeah. Well, I figured this challenge was an excuse to pull them out.
Love that.
Because, so I've got two. I want to say they're in a box, and my brain is not working, so I cannot think of the name of them for the life of me. The Japanese watercolors.
Bansei Kuretake?
Yeah, that's it. Yes, them. So I've got two boxes of those, because what else do I describe them as? If I ever just want to quickly put watercolor on something, that's what I tend to grab, because they're in pans, whereas the tin, they're in a tube. So in my head, there's an extra step that has to be taken to use the tube paints, which as I say that out loud, I realize how ridiculous that sounds. But anyway, here we are. That's me confessing to that. So I thought, well, instead of getting what I always go for, I'm actually going to get the tin out with the tubes and put them in, like, because why not, right? Like,
it felt
like a good excuse and a good reason to do so. And I must say, I'm super thrilled that I did, because it has one of my all-time favorite colors in it, which is Opera Rose. Oh, that color.
That's a beautiful
color. I could just pour that on everything and I'd be happy.
mix it with a tiny bit of titanium yellow or like a primary yellow, and you'll get the most beautiful, vibrant peachy tones for florals.
Okay.
Yeah, there's your color mixing tips. Which day is that one? I don't have my 30-day challenge.
It is there. I do. Yeah. It is. No, I haven't got it in front of me either. It's in the other room.
It's coming. No, I'm glad you shared that. Again, I feel like people will relate to the apprehension and the way that we approach what supplies we take out, why we use them, when we don't want to use them. And I think that's totally relatable, that it is an extra step. And when we feel so pressed for time, sometimes we just want to get to it. But the one thing that I would say about the tubes, it allows you to control the amount of paint that you have if you're working on a palette.
Yeah.
Really. So I actually love tubes when I'm in studio, because I can control how much of that opera rose I can lay down on my palette, and then how much of, you know, another color that I'll work with. And then I always just add to it. So if you use the same mixing palette, then you can just keep filling those little spots that you reserve color.
And
the color tends to be brilliant right from the get-go, because it's coming out of the tube ready to paint with. And it'll be a different texture than your Japanese set, because the Japanese sake, Gensai, they are a bit more like gouache. So they are a bit more opaque. You can water them down to make them a bit more transparent, but they definitely behave closer to a gouache than a watercolor, whereas your tubes are probably watercolor tubes, and you'll notice you may have granulation in some of them.
Yes, I've noticed that.
Have you?
So all I did was swatch the first day. I swatched the colors as per my instructions on your 30-day sheet, and I'm like, oh, these are completely different. And they're also, I can never pronounce Sennelier. I can never pronounce it right. I'm not even going to attempt to.
Yep.
Yeah, they were a gift for Christmas a few years ago. I asked for them because I just thought, I'm never going to spend this myself, but also the person wanted to buy me something I wanted. So, you know,
great, yeah.
And my goodness me, yes, completely different. Like, all I've done is swatch with them and then today paint leaves with one color. And I'm like, oh, these are completely different. Like, this is a whole different beast altogether, which is, you know, considering I don't do a lot of watercolor, I find it fascinating to notice the changes so immediately, like it's, or the differences, I guess, not the changes. But,
and that's why I start with swatching. Like, every practice, every day, and even the way that I design, whether it's my books or the lounge or a course, it's to take you through a process that has very specific outcomes, whether you know what they are at the swatching. How can you start to paint if you don't know what's in your palette? And you don't
know that makes sense.
What the color looks like wet, what it looks like dry, how is it, you know, at full opacity? What does it look like at, you know, when it's transparent? It's so every day, there's a reason why it's there. It's not random. It's not because, you know, I just decided because I love leaves, but it's, you know, the leaf practice is all about brush control and working on water control. So, you have these moments where you're like, oh, cool. And those are the moments that are planned, right? Like, they are the ones
that
designed that way to take you through this journey. So I'm really happy, because sometimes that feedback is, you know, exactly what I need to be like, yes, let's keep going.
Well, it was fascinating, right? So my first thought when I first read that it was leaves was, oh, I'll do something like a fern. And then I'm like, oh, no, I'm actually going to get what I have many houseplants. I stopped counting at 100. There's quite a few.
Oh, my God.
So I just, I grabbed. We have a lot of light in this house. This house is perfect for indoor plants. Like, it's, I love them. And thankfully, so does my husband. So there we go. He enables me.
Nothing wrong with that.
So I looked at the palette. And I was actually originally going to go with like a non-traditional leaf color. I just thought, why not be crazy, right? And pick it. And then I went, I looked at the palette and I don't remember the names. I should have all this in front of me, Nikki. Like, I'm realizing as I'm talking to you, I should have this stuff here so I could actually tell you the names and what we're doing. But anyway, and I looked at the two colors of green that are in the palette, and one of them's like it's a neon-y kind of color. And I've got a plant, a neon pothos. I'm like, well, you're going to get painted today because you match this palette perfectly. So I did. I just sat down and created these leaves, and it was just fascinating to watch the colour as it came out and then as it dried and the differences, and it really slowed me down. You know what I mean? Like, it really made me think about not really what I was doing, but rather what the supply was happening.
Yeah.
Which I wasn't expecting, and I'm here for, and I'm loving. So thank you for that.
Oh, I'm so, it's making me so happy to hear. I was actually just thinking two things. It would be really fun to have a conversation when you're done the 30-day challenge to do a little roundup.
Yes, true.
That would be fun.
Yes, true.
I think
that is true.
Your observations are exactly what I'm hoping people will get out of it. So that's fantastic. Thank you. And another thing I was thinking as you're chatting, again, if we remove the apprehension when it comes to painting with watercolor and the fear and maybe, you know, being intimidated, and really just enjoy what's happening on our page, watercolor is the only medium. And I paint with acrylic, I paint with oil, gouache, you name it. I don't discriminate. I love every art supply, every tool I kind of put my finger into. I may not be, you know, an expert in all of the different mediums.
Yep.
But close enough to really appreciate the fact that with watercolor, because of its really organic form and that it really is just pigment binder, and then maybe, you know, something to help preserve it, whether it's honey or clove or whatever, I've made my own watercolor paint. You can grind clay and rock and mineral and, you know, really, or again, organic components to make. And sometimes when you're mixing the pigment, that initial first material, they don't interact well together. So they start to fight and create this granulation, which we talked about. And then really, if you let watercolor flow and move and dry as it may, try not to control it too much, all of those characteristics and beauty that the pigment really has, it only happens with watercolor. I can water down acrylic paint that's still made with pigment, a binder, and maybe preservative. But when it dries, it will dry unless I add something to it to make it textured or pearlescent or whatever. But watercolor, just as it's produced in that form, has really beautiful characteristics. And especially when you let the colors start to mix together, or maybe let the water pool a little bit more on one end than it does, you know, on the other side of your brushstroke, almost effortless. So it's that slow observation of what's happening on your page as you're moving the brush, as the paint is starting to dry, that you really get to know how your watercolor behaves. So the next time you sit down to paint, you come back with that experience and that knowledge so you can push it a little bit further. And I'm hoping you have the courage to push it a little further and experiment a little bit. And you don't only do that day's, you know, practice for the challenge, but you continue your practice because
It's
drawing you in to make you want to paint more and explore the medium more. And then suddenly you realize your nervous system has calmed down. You've, again, done something for yourself. So you're grounding into that practice, and it makes you feel so good that you want to come back and do it again tomorrow. It's like exercise. Hmm. Right? It's like,
yes, right, yes, it is.
My sports bra and getting down to it. But after I've had that time that I made for myself and I got the hit of dopamine,
you know, it was worth it.
Good. Yeah. I'm like, okay, that was so good. Right? So
you just have to push through the pain.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny because I had thought I'm just going to paint one leaf, right? Like in my head, that was what I was going to do. And then I went, well, one, it actually says leaves. If I'm going to follow the instructions, I'm good at following instructions, Nikki. I'm nothing if not good at following instructions, as long as I like the instructions, of course. If I don't, well, then forget about it. But, and then I thought, well, no, because painting leaves does mean I'm going to take longer, right? I'm giving myself permission to take longer than a single leaf could take. And I'm really glad I did, because, of course, I wasn't trying to achieve reality.
Good.
That's just not possible for me. But I was sort of wanting to play around with the depth of the color on one leaf as opposed to another, right? Not necessarily trying to create light and shadow, but just to see what it does, like explore the medium, I guess. And so it was a really good opportunity to do that. And yes, to your point, I actually did want to keep going. but I had stuff, including this recording. So, you know, I couldn't quite do that. But hey, I wanted to, so that's a start, right?
I love that. It's exactly the, and I think every day you show up, you know, will be different. And, you know, every day you come maybe in a different mood, or you've got, you know, constraints and things like that. So as long as you do spend that time connecting and you allow that journey to be what it needs to be that day and through this process, then it is perfect. So that's amazing. And we do get back to leaves, and we do bring in a second color, which is, again, right? So when you come back to something that's familiar, it's like, okay, we did this. This feels good. Now I can bring in an element and then explore it even further. And again, the leaf practice for me, it's something that I do sometimes when I just need to decompress. I'm sitting at my desk and I need to hold my supplies. I need to do something. It is, you know, again, working on brush control and watercolor and water control, and even just sort of this meditative, really easy thing for me because I've done it so much. So it's, sometimes it's lettering. Sometimes it's just the simple strokes and the simple things, like you said. You're not having, you know, to think about, does this look realistic? It could be abstract, and it could be just whatever needs to be expressed that day. And that's what it means to connect with your art practice, I think. And there are moments for something that may be a little bit more realistic or more detailed, and you're adding value, and, you know, you're working on something a bit more of a finished painting. But those days will have their days. And it's, you know, this gentle start that will bring you to those days so that you feel a little bit more confident and a little bit more comfortable in your skill and what you're coming with.
I'm glad you mentioned earlier about the binding of your own books, because I decided to do that for this project too, because I knew I wanted to work smallish. I knew I wanted something that if I want to sit outside and do this to that day's practice. I don't know if you can hear that. My dog is snoring in the background. He's dreaming in the background, and it's making me laugh. And I'm trying not to laugh because it's so funny. But if I want to take, sorry, I just divert because I hear him and it's so cute. If I want to step outside, I wanted to have something smallish to take with me. You know, like, I only mean outside here. I don't mean going away from home to do it, but I wanted something that was easy to portable, I guess. And I don't have any of that sort of sketchbook in my collection. I've got most of what I've got for some reason is big. I don't know why, like A4 and A5. Why do I have such big pages, Nikki? Don't know. But anyway.
You're drawn to them, and there's something about them that, you know,
apparently,
experience. Have you used them yet?
All of the A4 ones, almost all of them are full.
Oh, amazing.
There's one or two empties. Yeah, but then the A5, no. So I took a couple of pages out of those. I pulled them out. It's actually quite nice paper. And I cut them down, and I haven't bound it yet, to be fair, but it's there. It's going to happen. Because I just thought, well, instead of going and buying something, why not just grab something you've got and just repurpose it to what you want? So that's what I've done. I've taken a couple of pages and, you know, now it's the size I want it to be, and it will be a book. I will get to that part of it, but
and maybe that's something start somewhere. You get to do, you know, at the end of the 30-day challenge. And
that's what I thought, because I was initially in my head, I was like, right, you have to have this done, but I'm like, why? No, I don't. I can buy
a cute clip
whenever I want to.
Clip the pages
who
together. Clip and you're good.
Who cares? It doesn't have there are like. No rules that I have to stick to about what this thing looks like. So
it's,
you know,
funny,
it's my project, right?
The parameters that we place on ourselves, right? Sometimes it's the it's how we, the stories that we tell ourselves, you know, of what, how it should be and what it should look like. It's really funny, like how that, it's like our innate experience of like keeping us safe. So, okay, you know, I have to bind it before I do anything, or I have to have this all set up.
Yes.
It can be messy, and it can be, you know, just get a clip and all of your practice can live together, or maybe it'll be in different parts of the house, and that's okay too. And I even think this whole challenge, because I have a little bit of apprehension when it comes to using the word challenge, but I had to use it because people connect to it and they get like, oh, okay, this is something we're going to do. But sometimes it has a bit of a negative connotation, I feel, to it, because if you don't do it, like I almost posted today, yay, you made it to day one, right? Because maybe day five, or I've done challenges where I don't complete them. How do I feel after? Well, kind of crappy, but I'm okay. I walk away with it and I get over it. But sometimes someone misses, like maybe day six, they're really busy and they can't get to their practice. Then I want you to just come back the next day or the day after, or whenever you can. You don't have to finish it every single day. It doesn't have to be within this, you know, parameter, this box. It can just be whatever your experience is. Maybe you're going to come, you know, up to day 30 and you're only going to have 12 paintings done. That's amazing. That's 12 paintings that you did. And that's the days.
Correct.
That's,
they weren't there before. Yes.
Exactly. Yep. Like that's a success for me. So it's just the way that we bring our own perspectives into things. So I love that, you know, maybe at the end you'll bind them and it'll be really cool to be able to say, look at all the great experiences that I got to be for myself. And you know, I always say make notes and write down what you
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that about the word challenge, because I did a challenge in January. It was a drawing one. And I did the first day, or the first 1 or 2 days, and then I think it was like the next 3 or 4, something like that. Whatever reason, the daily practice, I didn't like it. For whatever it was that we were meant to do, I didn't do it because I didn't like it. It just, something about, now, I don't even remember what it was, like, which is crazy for me to, but I remember that I had a strong dislike of what was required. And I went, well, then don't do it. Because I hadn't paid for this challenge. So, because I do know, and there's nothing wrong with the challenges where you're required to pay because you might get instruction or whatever. That's completely fine. That wasn't one of these. It was a free challenge. And I just went, well, instead of spending time doing something I did not want to do, I just didn't do it. And it made me aware that it's okay to not do every day if you don't want to do every day. Like sometimes we can't show up because of illness, work, whatever's going around in our world, or sometimes you just might not like that day's prompt, and it's okay.
Trust me, I know.
And then finally, once I got through those first few that I didn't like, and then one appeared, the next one that I did, bang, done. All of them got done, except for there's about five that I just did not do. They, for whatever reason, they didn't speak to me. I didn't want to spend my time doing them. I did something else instead, something else creative that I'd wanted to do. And I think we need to remember that it is okay to not do every day of a challenge or everything. If for whatever reason you don't.
Yeah, if you don't want to paint leaves, then maybe paint flowers or paint, I don't know, I'm looking at my paint tubes on my desk, which I did at one point during the challenge. But paint something else, or you know, go back to something that felt good. I love that. And I think that, again, the challenge and the whole connotation around it sometimes maybe feels a little bit too challenging. And
it
feels hard.
Yeah.
Something that, you know, doesn't feel good in the moment, it's not what you need. Go back to your art practice and go back to what feels good to you. And again, and I think it's that whole casual approach that I have to making art and learning and making it be really personal. So I like to give guidelines and I like to, you know, give as much instruction as possible, but I also like to give ideas. So sometimes I over deliver in that, you know, I want to show you everything because I want to show you that there's so many possibilities. Just because I love, whether it's this color or this motif or this process, it doesn't mean that it has to be yours. I'm going to share as much ideas so that you can then bring into your practice what feels good for you and what you want to explore more yourself.
So was it actually hard to choose those 30 different daily instructions? Like, was it hard to narrow down to 30? Because I can imagine
it actually
have a million different things.
It probably took me, I want to say, like it took me maybe 3 or 4 iterations of what I published. Based on, and again, like as someone who teaches, I want to make sure that I'm enjoying what we're painting because I have to love it and be passionate about it.
Exactly.
I don't do pet portraits. I love pets. I do animals here and there, but I don't do, So if I were to do a class on pet portraits, because that's what everyone is asking for, it's going to fail because I'm not connected. I'm not passionate. It's inauthentic. So yeah. When I am putting together something like the book, the challenge, you know, the classes, I have to balance things that I enjoy, painting, drawing, exploring, with, is this what, you know, sort of the average person maybe is interested in or wants to practice and try? And then I bring in, again, the way that I like to teach is it's very designed by sort of the journey that I want you to go through, so that you can go through the techniques in a way that feels fun, but it doesn't feel like you're practicing a specific technique sometimes. Sometimes, yes. We're practicing. Mm-hmm. So when I'm sitting down to think about this experience, again, it's something that I go to bed thinking about and something that I wake up thinking about. And it's, you know, how would I approach it? How could I illustrate it? How could I describe it? But then make it simple. Make it feel that, you know, someone looking at it who maybe doesn't have any experience or has a little bit of experience, or, you know, wants to come back to their watercolor practice, how will they look at it and will they be excited to try? And then, you know, again, making it a little bit more so that the majority of the, you know, the population will look at it and say, yes, I can do that. And I think it's a bit of trial and error, but also staying true to myself as, you know, an artist who I am and what I like as well. And I always believe that I'm not for everyone. And, you know, you may not like my aesthetic or my approach or my style, and that's okay. I'm okay with that because I know that when I'm presenting anything that I'm teaching, again, whether it's a book class, etc., I'm bringing in my passion and my authentic self. And I know that the people who are drawn to that similar type of aesthetic or style or technique or approach will find me. And that's always been the way that I've designed it. And then I agonize over, I'll like paint everything. I'll like have my sketchbooks and I'll have thumbnails. And then I'm like, okay, does this make sense in the process? And I'll move stuff around. So I'm pretty happy with it. And again, it's a free 30-day challenge. You can imagine how much time and effort went into it. Yes. Right? So you can then imagine the book and all of it. And even the book is out and there are things that need to be changed with the second printing. And, you know,
so that's how it goes.
And doesn't matter how many eyes were on that. I found stuff just yesterday. And I went, oh, how was that missed? But it gets missed. So,
but you know what? The thing about that is, okay, you may have had 50 sets of eyes on that book, right? And a mistake was missed. But that's great because it means humans were attached to the project. Yeah, like I'm not going to jump on a soapbox and complain about AI because there are elements to it that I actually appreciate and do use. But when we're talking about this kind of thing, yeah. Do you know what? I always think, going back to the subject of books in general, whenever I come across a book, and it happens more so with my older books in my collection, I'll be rereading a book, and you can see it's whether it's a spelling mistake or they've just accidentally missed a word that should be in a sentence. It always makes me smile because, one, I pick up on the mistake and I'm like, haha, I picked a mistake, you missed. But then it means that people were involved and people aren't perfect. So why should the resulting products that we put out be perfect, right? Like, I don't know. I'm happy for there to be mistakes in books and in art in general because, you know, it was people making them and it means that we've made a mistake that perhaps a robot or an AI or whatever wouldn't have made. And I'm here for mistakes.
I am totally on that soapbox with you. 100%. When I'm recording video, today's video where I did head to camera, I edited, and I'm not an editor, but I do my best, but I know editing mistakes in it. And you know what, Kim? I'm like, so either I have two choices, and this happens with filming classes, with technology, all of that, because I have two choices. When things like that happen, I notice it. A, I can publish it and just be done and put it out into the world and let it serve its purpose, which was to introduce the challenge and the excitement for April and have it be engaging and all of those things. Or I can agonize over it and spend the next hour trying to make it perfect, which at what level of perfection, because there's always going to be something. Mm-hmm. And then have that completely drain me and have it be that I just want to turn everything off in an hour and, you know, curl up into the corner and cry, right? So that's same sort of approach with art. So if there are wobbly lines, if you can see pencil lines underneath your painting, if, again, I'm thinking about the wobbles, then embrace those. And I think that highly curated social media feed, now let's add in some AI and everything is so damn polished. Let's make it messy again. Let's, you know, embrace that mess. And who cares? And I had a friend in a lovely, beautiful, and she came with love and said, you know, you should try this and this for editing your videos. I just laughed to myself. I'm like, I love you. I love you so much. And I know that, like, you just get to give me a little bit of advice. I'm like, I know. I actually don't care. I laughed to myself. And I'm like, good. No. People are watching because I'm like, because the captioning said life by design. So life by design. I'm like, yeah, I could go in.
No, and whatever.
Stuff. I'm like, who cares? They know it's life by design, whatever. I'm not fast. I'm like, let's embrace those mistakes and things.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You're not up for an Oscar. Who cares, right?
Did you get the message? Did you download the 30-day challenge? Are you going to paint with me then? I am.
That's all that matters. All.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. So actually on that, what I feel like we should talk about is, let's say somebody's at this conversation and they actually have not got watercolors in their stash of art supplies, or, you know, maybe like me, they have some that they've just not opened. What sort of, let's give some gentle direction for somebody who wants to start exploring the world of watercolor and they really don't know where to start, because it can, any new medium, any new craft, any new whatever can be incredibly overwhelming, because we also have so much information at our fingertips that it can be overwhelming.
And so, choice when it comes to watercolor supplies. Yep. Yeah, for sure.
It's huge. So what should somebody look for when they're looking to get themselves a set of watercolors, perhaps a surface to work on, and a paintbrush or two? Like, what would you suggest to somebody?
From scratch. Okay.
So yeah.
I think is good advice, because we all come with different budgets, or, you know, different countries. We all have access to different supplies. My, you know, closest art supply shop doesn't have half as much as what I'd love to get my hands on. Whereas, you know, if I drive another 40 minutes further, I can get to an art supply shop that has more variety. So we have access to different things, as well as, you know, things that we can get online. So my best advice is try to shop in person when you're looking for watercolor supplies. Don't be intimidated to go into an art store, because anyone that works in that art supply store, if you stop them for a moment to ask their advice, they are A, trained, B, more than happy, and 3, more than willing to help set you up so that you have the best possible supplies at your budget and, you know, what your expectations are. So I recommend for watercolor to make sure that your watercolor brushes state clearly that they are made for watercolor. Watercolor brushes are made and designed so that they hold lots of water, so you've got lots of pigment that it can become saturated with. And then when you release that pigment onto the paper, it is a really lovely experience, and it lasts a little while in terms of the amount of water and watercolor that's on the paintbrush. I don't think that you need to spend a lot of money on a brush. You don't need to buy real hair. You can buy a synthetic brush, and it is great quality if you treat it well. So rinse it, just lay it flat to dry. And just use it for watercolor, your brushes should last you a very, very long time. I like round brushes. I feel like if they have a nice fine tip, I can do some detail work, as well as create some washes just by pressing down on them a little bit harder. A little flat brush, so maybe like a half inch flat to do washes like skies and land and things like that are great. So maybe a detailed brush that's like a 0 to size 2. I would say maybe a round brush that is a 6 to 8. With different manufacturers, the sizing is all different, so I can't even
size.
And then like a half inch flat if you're working on small 9x12 size sheets of watercolor paper. Next, I would say watercolor paper. You can get practice paper that's pulp, so made from wood versus cotton, and cotton paper is the preference. However, paper can be really expensive and it could be the thing that holds you back. So we had that conversation about, you know, looking at a blank page and being intimidated, or having a bound book that you've just spent $60 on. You're thinking, oh my God, who am I to paint swatches in the $60 bound watercolor book? So in that case, get a paper that is pulp cellulose blend so that it accepts wet medium. So you want watercolor paper or paper that's suitable for wet medium, especially if you're just starting out brush strokes and color swatching and you're figuring out water control and all of those things. If you feel like a cotton paper is too expensive, there are 50% blends that I pick up all the time, but when I'm just swatching and practicing and doing thumbnails and sketches and things like that. If you're working on a more finished piece that maybe you want to gift or you want to sell, use a 50% cotton paper. And there are tons of brands on the market that make some really beautiful watercolor, not 50% cotton, did I just say that? 100% cotton. That makes beautiful cotton paper that have beautiful texture. You can get smooth if you want. And that becomes a process. And that becomes a moment where you go into your art supply store, your craft store. I would say art supply because they'll have more choice. And maybe ask the person there what they have on special, what they, you know, would recommend. So you can try out a few different types of paper. Because I think paper is very personal. Then I would say your biggest budget should really go to your paint. If you use professional quality paint, so like your Sennelier, for instance, you're going to get a really rich, deeply pigmented brush stroke just because of the quality of the paint. What makes a professional quality different from a student quality or like a beginner crafter quality is the amount of pigment. So that color, the amount of that color in that tube of paint is much higher. So when you squeeze it out of the tube, it will be saturated and really brilliant and highly pigmented. In a lower grade paint, you'll still have that pigment in the tube, but it'll be less quantity. So it won't be as saturated. It won't be as brilliant. And I believe, and again, everyone has their preferences, but I believe if I use a professional quality paint on any paper, and this is coming from someone who paints on every surface. I've painted on linen, canvas, antique vintage book pages. You can look at it on my Instagram. I paint on everything. If I use a professional quality watercolor, I can paint on pretty much any surface because it comes out so pigmented and so rich. And you'll use that paint again and again and again. You'll find that it'll take you a long time if you're using a tube, for instance, to get to the bottom of that tube. You have to be painting large pieces and large quantities. So spend a little bit more money, and you don't need 24 colors, 48 colors, you know, a really good solid 12 colors. We can even talk a little bit about that if we have time, will really get you going so you can mix some colors and be able to paint a large variety of painting.
Yeah, definitely. That's actually a good point. Let's talk about that fact that you actually don't, I mean, it's nice to have, you know, 100 tubes of 100 different colors, but you don't actually have to have that, right? Like, so that's a good point.
Sometimes too much choice is just too much. It's overwhelming. I know myself, I've just become an ambassador for Deep Deep Lights watercolor. They're a brand, actually, we're doing a giveaway with them for the challenge. They're beautiful, richly pigmented dry pans made from the earth and poured by lovely women in Latvia who just are all about creativity, and they're so inspiring. And what I love about them is, again, the variety of colors. They're very earthy and speak to me, but they've sent me so many colors to test because they really were excited. We're putting palettes together, and I'm like,
of course.
Oh my God,
the
perfect peach. And oh my God. So they're so generous.
Too much choice.
And I honestly, I got a little box from them, and I think they probably sent me, I don't know, 50 colors, and I haven't opened them because I'm still getting to know the colors that are still new to me. And I always say it's like sweatshirts. I'm wearing a sweatshirt right now, but it's like I have 15 sweatshirts in my closet, and how many do I reach for?
Correct. Yeah, three. Yep. You never know. It's crazy, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
So looking at my watercolor, and I can see them across. I have a painting desk on the other side of the studio, and I can see them. And their colors now within the palettes that I've been testing and practicing that are like halfway used, because those are the ones that I keep going back to. Mm-hmm. So don't overwhelm yourself and buy anything more than, I would say, no more than 24. So sometimes you get a pan set of 24 if you are just starting. And if you are just starting, look for a set that has your primary yellow, magenta, blue, so that you can mix some of your greens and purples and things like that, but also some more earthy tones like the yellow ochre, the burnt sienna, or I like varieties of blues because I love painting skies, and I don't know, blues and greens are my favorite. But if you have trouble with color and color mixing, as most new artists do, get a palette that has a really great selection of variety of 12 or 14 that offer those primaries and then some of those more earthy tones like the umbers and things like that too. I don't use black and I don't use white. I use white gouache sometimes, but as a beginner, don't even worry about black and white. You don't want to use black and white.
Actually, one thing I would add to that, if we are thinking somebody completely utterly new, and really this goes to anything, is download a color wheel. So as you can see whether, I mean, yes, you want to explore the creating of different colors yourself, but download a color wheel from somewhere online. There's 4 million of them all over the place. So you can actually see the different values, because I think sometimes it helps to have that there before you start to try and create a lighter color or a darker color. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like having that there is so handy.
It's in the book. I have it as one of the, I think there's a few color mixing practices within the 30-day challenge. For sure, there's two. And I think being comfortable with color mixing is huge. Sometimes we're lazy. And honestly, I love to just squeeze out Payne's Gray. I can mix Payne's Gray, but I'm going to squeeze it out of a tube because I can do that. However, I only am at that point where I know what color I need when I'm bringing in something like Payne's Gray because I practice. So again, for someone who's new, I love the idea that you mentioned, download a color wheel, look at what colors are possible that you can mix. And through your practice, whether it's this 30-day challenge or you're listening to it, you know, in a few months from now, through your practice, sit down and start mixing colors together and observe what those colors, you know, look like. And if you're mixing mud, you know, when did that muddy sort of color start to come into play? And make notes and slow down. And use that observation to help build your color mixing skills. Color mixing is a whole other conversation, I think. And I think
yes, we probably should do that too. Yeah, we have a growing list of conversations.
Let's do that. We're going to do once a month. Check-in. How's that?
Yeah, I think we're at that point. Yes, but it's interesting. You just made me realize something. Now, of course, I want everyone to buy your book, right? Of course, I do. But the other thing is. A lot of the time, and I don't know specifics about your 30-day challenge, but a lot of the time we can find these challenges after they're done and dusted because of the online world. Like, so we can type in Nikki Trakos 30-day watercolor challenge in 6 months' time and we might still be able to find that PDF. And that's probably something we should all think about is there might not be a challenge happening from an artist or somebody right now, right this second, that they've got ready to go, but maybe they've had one in the past and you can find, like, I think part of it is we think, oh, well, that challenge was,
yeah,
I missed it.
I missed
can't
it.
Can't do yep. it. Mm-hmm. But you can start it whenever you want. And I kind of feel like that's kind of like the 100-day challenges that a lot of people do. They don't have to start on a predetermined, you know, whether it's the 1st of January on any given year or even a 52-week project. They also don't have to start on the 1st of January and run for 52 weeks. If I wanted to start one tomorrow, I absolutely could, and I would just count, you know, work for 52 weeks. And I think it's another one of those little things that I think we give ourselves as, oh, well, we can't do that because that's not the rules. No, the rules are maybe it's great if you want to participate with Nikki's community, for example, on this challenge.
And be in
you
know, that energy.
I imagine.
Like as you're trying to get that energy, right? Like if the timing works out, it's the energy of the excitement that everyone is. Yeah.
Yep. And if it's not, it's fine. You can just do it whenever it works for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing too.
And I think like some people, I know I've had some messages today, you know, where should I post? How should I post? Like, I want you to post because I want to see what you're doing because I get it.
Yes. Yes.
Sometimes it's even, don't even feel the pressure of having to share or post what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Like that's no one's business. You don't have to if you feel uncomfortable, if you don't feel ready. Honor that and just be in the practice of the challenge, whether you're finding it this month, next month, whatever, And don't feel like you need to share if it's not your vibe.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's more important that you do the challenge, I think, that you show up and do that. I mean, I say that, and I did tag you on Substack today because only simply because I had Claire, she come into my lap as I was working on this little painting, and I'm like, oh, now I've got my dog and I have to take a photo and I have to share it with Nikki. So, you know, okay, I did actually share. But
thank you. I definitely don't have to. I get excited and then I can share. And then that it's sometimes, you know, with it coming from someone else's experience, someone else might relate to your experience and feel connected and think, oh my God, I'm inspired. So that's why I love to share. It's not only do I want to see what you're doing so that I can see sort of my ideas come to life through your practice, right? It's like, okay, did I do a good job? Did I figure it? But I'm also sharing it because I want others to see, and maybe they're connecting with what you're sharing so that they can feel like they have a space to join and it's for them as well. So thank you. I love that. I'm going to hop on to Substack after we're done. And
well, yeah, I think, look, this is probably a good time to wrap. I don't know if the listeners could pick up on this. Nikki and I could talk for hours.
Absolutely.
Probably not a good idea for a podcast, however. but I do think we need to revisit perhaps after the 30 days, maybe in May, we should get together and have another conversation. But before we wrap, where is the best place for people to find you online?
So my website is lifebydesign.com, and that's where you can find the book and the challenge and things like that. Instagram is where we share a ton of what's happening. Newsletters are where we share first, but also Substack. I've been really loving the space there. I try to minimize the amount of time that I spend on social because it can be consuming, especially with an online like the one that I have. But I really do enjoy the community and the connection that's happening in Substack. So if either of those modes speak to the listener, I invite you to just check us out on lifebydesign.com. That's where you can find the book, the resources, the books out worldwide. So if you don't see it in your country, send me a message. I can reach out to the public. it's at most retailers online and in shops. And if it isn't, again, let me know. I let the bookstore know. And the challenge is happening now until April 30th. And it's just a really lovely, gentle way to kind of get back to your watercolor practice and do something for yourself, which ultimately I'm a huge advocate for.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you so much, Nikki, for making time, for joining me. And congratulations on book number 2. That's so exciting.
Yay. Thank you for having me. I always love our conversation. I feel like your just perspective and the energy that you put into your podcast and what you do is just, it speaks to me. So it's always so easy to connect and chat with you. Thank you. It's been great.
Thank you so much.
Would you be interested in making a one-off payment to support us? In return, you'd be helping to keep the podcast going and would also get access to our bonus episodes. Let me know what you think via Kim@artsupplyposse.com or via Instagram.